The Tale of the Frozen Pussy, Slipper Trip, The Million Dollar Fee. These are just a few of the strange cases and wild tales you will hear on Miami Memoirs. Join Florida attorney Louis Ress as he recounts his 6 decades of legal practice in the wilds of South Florida.
Before the podcast begins, I would like to share with you some exciting news. Louis has released a knockout second title, Miami Memoirs, including The Maharani's Ring. Round 2 from the amazing life and times of legendary South Florida attorney Louis Ress takes readers from Brooklyn in the 1940s via a spell in a top-secret army department and a transatlantic solo flight in a replica Spirit of St. Louis to adventures in and out of the courtroom in a sometimes rougher-than-ready 50s and 60s Miami. The book is available now on Amazon. Just search Louis Ress. And before we start, don't forget to like our Facebook page, Miami Memoirs. And now let's begin.
Hi everyone, I'm here with Louis Ress, and we're starting up again another episode of Miami Memoirs, Strange Cases and Wild Tales. This is episode 22, Hand-to-Hand Combat. So, Louis, this is an interesting story. It sounds a bit physical, huh? How can we have hand-to-hand combat in while you're practicing law?
That's a good question. I think Rudy Giuliani said that he wanted something resolved, the issue of Trump's re-election, mm-hmm. by hand-to-hand combat.
Trial
by combat. Well, of course, that's terrible. And trial by combat has no place. It used to be in the old dark ages. The truthful person, they dunk them in water, and if they didn't drown, they were innocent, and if they drowned, they were guilty.
Oh, my.
And then they'd have combat, and the winner in the combat would be telling the truth. Hmm. That's how they decided who was telling the truth.
Wow.
When in lawyers, it really comes to bullying. Hmm. And I talk about it in my books. You know, I'm promoting my books here.
Yeah, you know, they're a great read.
Strange Cases and Wild Tales was the first one. Mm-hmm. And the second was Miami Memoirs, including the story of the Maharani's Ring. Mm-hmm. And we've been doing fine. The books have been selling on Amazon. And the money goes to charity.
Wonderful.
So this one is called Hand-to-Hand Combat, and it's about lawyer bullying. And it's terrible bullying.
And it's incredible what happens at that level, too.
Well, yeah, there's no control for doctors, lawyers, judges, for their emotional stability.
Mm. Yeah.
And they don't give them a test. You would think that they would give them some type of there are tests for psychological stability.
Right.
And when they go wildly off, you don't have to, people with minor problems certainly shouldn't be disqualified. Mm-hmm. But if people are really dangerous.
Yeah, of course.
And physically aggressive, then they should be culled out and they should be vetted out and they shouldn't be in the professions.
Yeah.
Of doctors, lawyers, judges.
And it's sensitive information they're dealing with, too.
Right. Yeah. Well, no. This one is a story about hand-to-hand combat in courtrooms. Mm. The first one was John Matthews. That's not his real name, but it's very close. John Matthews' life was a mess. He was single, he was bitter, and he was angry and frustrated. He was clenching his teeth all the time. You've seen people that clench their teeth. Mm-hmm. The veins on the side of his head were bulging. Here he was, back in the courtroom, defending some second-rate insurance company that took 3 months to pay his bills. That tells you when they don't pay your bills timely that they're not the top-notch companies. He detested his job. And also he was having sexual relationship with a married judge.
Huh.
Who I know.
Just to top it.
And before whom he was trying cases.
Uh-oh.
Of course, he was winning those cases for the insurance companies, and she could claim that she was a conservative judge, mm-hmm. ruling for the insurance industry. So it was a source of growing tension in his relationship with her. She wasn't letting go so fast, and he was sorry that he'd gotten involved. She called him at all times of the night when her older husband was asleep, begging him to be more loving and caring and spend more time together. Also, she wasn't very much in bed. And it had grown boring for him. It was almost an annoying routine. It was not exciting anymore. Hmm. And he was thinking, how do I get out of this? Matthews knew that I had seen them together he and the judge, having cocktails and dining in some small and unusual places in the North Miami Beach area, far removed from where either of them lived or had offices. One didn't have to be a Sherlock Holmes to figure out what was going on. So I tried to avoid both of them. Ultimately, their affair went on its way, out of my thinking. When it occasionally came into my thoughts, I started to feel sorry for Matthews.
Is this common?
No, but it's happened a number of times. There are other, and talking about women becoming aggressive with men. We tend to forget that. We listen to a whole bunch of women complaining about men being aggressive. But we don't have many men complaining about women being aggressive, mm-hmm. but they are. Mm-hmm. And they give you hints, and they touch you, and they do all kinds of things. And the men just let it go. They don't make it. Maybe once in a rare while a man will complain, but not often. Yeah. Usually they just go,
yeah, exactly, they just go with it, right?
Anyhow, you would think that you wouldn't have to be a black belt fighter in order to survive as a trial lawyer. But much to my surprise, I learned from John Matthews that hand-to-hand combat was often part of being an attorney and trying a case. There seems to be no screening for mental stability at any stage, including admission to law school and the state and even the federal bar associations. If there were, Matthews could have never passed it. His psychiatric condition would have been treated as a confidential illness, and he at least would have to show that he was under treatment. And they wouldn't let him loose.
How would you screen lawyers and judges?
Well, there's a test. I'm trying to think. It has some initials, the PPD something test. I think the Minnesota test that screens out people that are psychiatrically troubled. And you take the test and you fill out the forms, you answer the questions, and it reads a profile. And it's not really accurate for treatment purposes, but it will give you a big generic feeling of somebody's psychiatric condition.
And is it, like, obvious? You know, because sometimes some of those tests, like, the questions are worded obviously, so if someone's trying to pass as, like, normal or being okay,
fudge.
They can lie,
it's
you know?
It's all fudged up for fudging and everything.
Okay, good.
You know, it's not like the Rorschach test. You know, the Rorschach test of the inkblots.
Mm-hmm.
And the psychiatrist handed this guy the inkblot test, mm-hmm. and he started to describe the most wild sexual orgies and mm-hmm. crazy things. And she finally got disgusted, and she said, you know, I've been doing this test for 10 years now. You are the most ugly, offensive, disgusting person in the world that's describing these things. He says, lady, what are you picking on me for? They're your dirty pictures. Anyhow, there is no screening, and Matthews would have never passed it. Because he was really, and he's not alone by far. The law practice is loaded with nuts, and they're dangerous. And these violent wackos are often successful by intimidating everyone, including the judge. Well, I was in the middle of a hotly contested workers' compensation case before Judge Henderson, who's passed on. My opposing counsel, John Matthews, cracked up. And he announced that he was going out in the hall with me to resolve our differences by beating the hell out of me.
Oh, what did he say after that?
Well, he said, Res, I'm going to teach you a lesson. He was shaking all over. He was in an uncontrollable rage.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm going to bash you. Let's go outside and settle this thing right now.
Wow. What did the judge do at the time?
The judge didn't even blink. He sat there as though it was customary and it was the thing to do. And I wasn't going anywheres with Matthews. Matthews was 6 inches taller than I. He was 100 pounds heavier than I was and 10 years younger than I. And he was clearly out of control. He was crazy.
Yeah.
So I know I was going to be physically damaged severely, if not killed. So I said to myself, Lewis, just sit tight. This too shall hopefully pass. And it did. It did. I think Matthews walked out of the hearing, and the judge said, well, we'll have Mr. Matthews back another time, you know.
Oh, my.
Judge wasn't going to do anything. So there was
a lesson.
Why
didn't the judge get involved? I'm curious.
The judges are interested primarily in one or two things. Don't make waves because you'll get in trouble.
Mm.
You'll get investigated. They'll say you can't control your courtroom, which is coming up, and you want to retire on Social Security and your retirement.
So you just remain
judge.
Neutral, just whatever happens, let it happen.
Right.
Okay.
Don't let it get you. So they can, the judge just doesn't want to be criticized.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lesson to be learned. The next law associate that I hired, you know, young attorney out of law school, he had been a lineman for the University of South Florida football team. He was about 6'4" and he weighed in at 280 pounds. His name was David. And David accompanied me to the next hearing I had with Matthews, where we had to go back in front of Judge Henderson. And I had David sit quietly in the back of the room. He was sitting in the back. And sure enough, Matthews was losing, and he went berserk. And he started on me again. He said, "Okay, Res, get up and come outside. We'll finish this. I'll punch you out." Well, I knew it was coming, so I kept seated. And in a loud voice, I turned to my new associate in the back of the room, and I said, "David, please get up and go outside with Mr. Matthews and accommodate him for me." Well, the judge said nothing. You know, they're appointed on a salary. They don't want to make waves. They have no overhead. They don't have to bring in business. They don't have to work in a law office. They have very nice hours. They get to be called judge, and they think of retirement.
They're very comfy up in their chair.
Yeah, it's nice. It's not, you don't have to prepare like you do if you're one of the parties with the witnesses and the law and the briefs and the. So, David, all 280 pounds of him, stands up and comes walking forward. He was massive. Matthews took a good look at David, and he suddenly sat down and shut up. We finished trying the case without any further disruption, and David became my trial assistant. He came with me to the trials. Sometimes later, I saw a big, loaded .45 caliber revolver in Matthews' briefcase. I'm not kidding. And he was nuts enough to use it.
But
and it was loaded.
They didn't have metal detectors at the time?
No.
In the courtrooms?
They didn't have anything in those days. You know, there was a time when we didn't have a metal detector anyplace.
That's
in
nuts.
In the airports, anyplace.
That's crazy, though.
Anyone
could just walk in there.
Anyhow, the lady judge who he was involved with ultimately divorced her husband, and she went onward and upward to a seat on a higher court, and Matthews retired to a small town in Central Florida. That was the end. And David...
Yeah, did you keep your bodyguard, or what happened there?
No, he's my trial associate and my bodyguard. But he was a good lawyer, and he was assigned his own cases. And I was back alone trying a hotly contested case in front of Judge Leonard Barone. That's very close to his real name.
Mm-hmm.
This time it was another nutcake, Boyd Tabaka, and that's very close to his real name. And I had objected to some evidence that Boyd Tabaka was trying to introduce before the judge, and the judge had ruled in my favor. There was just three of us in the hearing room, and I guess the evidence was very relevant and important, and Tabaka couldn't get it in, and he was very frustrated. He was really upset, and he blurted out, "Rest, you goddamn Jew."
Oh, my gosh.
Judge Barone was pretty cool. He said, "Mr. Tabaka, there's no place in this courtroom for that type of an outburst."
At least he said something about it.
Yeah. And I was trying to be a nice guy, so I said, "Judge, I'm sure Mr. Tabaka just got carried away, and he really doesn't mean that." Then Tabaka screams, "Rest, you goddamn Jew bastard, I meant every word of it. I meant every word of it." Well, Tabaka jumps up from his chair and runs behind the judge and rushes towards me.
What'd you do?
Well, he passed by the seated judge, and he's just about to pounce on me.
Oh, my God.
This guy weighs over 200 pounds, and I weighed in at about 143 at the time. Did you ever see an old-fashioned lion tamer? I grabbed my chair and had four prongs on it. I lifted it up so that the legs faced Tabaka and came running at the chair. The judge jumped up and threw his arms around Tabaka and grabbed him from behind
and subdued him. That's crazy. That is crazy. And you actually got the judge to do something.
Yeah. Well, Judge Barone then adjourned the hearing. And Tabaka stormed out and said, "I'll get you, Res. I'll get you." So
that's nuts.
The judge wasn't going to do anything. So I turned to the judge, and I was really hot. I was really angry. I said, "Judge, I'm not about to let this go unreported. The Florida bar should know about this. This is anti-Semitism. This is bullying. This is a physical threat. The guy assaulted me."
Yes.
I said, I'm going to press charges." And the judge, who I knew very well, and his daughter became a very famous appellate judge, by the way, he said, "Lewis, please don't do this. I'll be called as a witness. I will be blamed for not controlling my courtroom, and it will reflect poorly on me. I would appreciate your not making any formal complaints.
Oh.
Okay?
Come on now.
That's just, you know, it's just true stuff. You can't make this up.
How frustrating. That's
so
frustrating.
So what do I do? I wasn't going to let tobacco get away with it.
No,
of course
not.
So I thought, well, I said, what can I do? I went home that night, I slept on it, and I said, I know what I'll do. Tobacco practiced workers' compensation law, and the issues always involved medical testimony. And I knew all of the orthopedists and neurosurgeons in the whole area. Many of them were Jewish.
Oh.
The others had close dealings with the Jewish community. These were people that dealt with Jews all the time, and they got along, and everybody was happy, and nobody considered it.
Yes.
Well, it wasn't long before just about every orthopedist and neurosurgeon in the county had heard the story from me. They were no longer willing to be helpful to Mr. Tobacco and his clients. And they were not easily available to testify for Mr. Tobacco.
Good.
They wouldn't meet with Mr. Tobacco to discuss any cases. One of the doctors confronted him at a deposition. He said, oh, you're Tobacco, the anti-Semite. Get the hell out of here. He did.
Good job, Lewis.
So Mr. Tobacco paid the price.
What ended up happening to him?
Well, I didn't say anything other than to the doctors. But Tobacco stopped getting cases referred from Jewish attorneys. You know, workers' compensation specialists have to get their cases mostly from other attorneys that refer them.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
send them in. And so I think a lot of
you
the
cut
attorneys,
his line, pretty much.
Attorneys stopped sending him cases.
Yeah.
And the last I heard from about Mr. Tobacco was that he was up on charges before the Florida bar for disciplinary action for soliciting oral sex from a client.
Oh, dear. Just
so
to add
Mr.
to
Tobacco.
It.
And, you know, they run to form.
Oh,
these guys.
Wow.
Okay, one more confrontation.
There's more? Wow, Lewis.
There's always more with me. Now that I'm old and gray, one would expect kindness and compassion for my failing mental acuity and some kind of respect.
Oh, come on. You're as bright as sunshine.
I'm okay, but
you're sharp.
Anyhow, at the last mediation I attended, there was another wild experience. An electric company's truck, a big, you know, like Florida Power and Light, it wasn't Florida Power and Light, but something like that, had plowed into our client's car, a young lady, and caused quite a bit of damage. And the young lady was pregnant, and she was very worried about whether her child would be born normally, which turned out okay, but she was injured.
Yeah.
And the utility company wanted to settle the case. And because of my age, I referred the case out to a trial specialist, Mel Martin. And he had reasons to see the matter resolved. He knew a lot about the case, and our client wasn't exactly the most elegant, refined lady. Mm. So he agreed to have mediation.
And so what happened at the mediation?
So we went to the mediation. Well, the mediator was an older man with thinning hair, a typical middle-level partner of a small firm. His office was plain, the furniture was plain, the mediator was plain. He introduced himself, and he told us of his experience and little else. He seemed to know the electric company's attorney on a first-name basis, as well as the lady adjuster, the representative, you know, the claims representative from the electric company. They were self-insured. The three of them had been speaking as we entered the glassed-in conference room, and I noticed that the minute I walked into the glass conference room, the conversation suddenly stopped.
Does that usually happen when you walk into a room?
No, they were talking, and suddenly they didn't want me to hear what they were saying. And that involved the mediator, and the adjuster, and the attorney. So I sat next to our client, Myra. Her name was Myra. The mediator briefly explained the process. He told us what about mediation was about, and that it was an informal procedure, and he asked them to listen to one another and to compromise in an effort to get the case settled. He invited the attorneys to make opening statements. Our attorney, Mel Martin, was very brief. He was seated and faced and addressed the mediator, and he outlined the history of the accident, the extent of the injuries, the resulting disability, and he agreed that we were there to attempt to settle the damages in a fair and reasonable way. Mm-hmm. The next one to talk after Mel was the electric company's attorney, Del Johnson. He was a big guy, about 6'3". He was about 60 years of age, and I'm 90. He stood up over our client, facing and glaring down at our client. This client is a 100 pounds, 21-year-old girl. Instead of talking to the mediator about the facts, he turned on the young girl, our client, and she was literally shaking in her boots.
Mm-hmm.
And he raised his voice and he said, I like mediation because it gives me a chance to talk directly to the plaintiff. You can't stop me, young lady. I'm going to make your life very difficult. I'm going to make you unhappy. I'm going to cross-examine you on the witness stand. You will really be unhappy when I'm done. Do you want to go through that type of experience? You better settle this case here and now. You make the decisions. You don't have to follow what your lawyers tell you. You are the client. You can do anything you want. They do what you tell them to do.
That's out of order, right? He should not be doing that.
Right. Before he could say anything more, my co-counsel, Mel Martin, didn't open his mouth. I was shocked. I mean, he should have done something.
Yeah.
So I stopped. I said, hold it, enough. Mr. Johnson, it's enough. You should be making your remarks to the mediator and to us as attorneys. This is not a free-for-all where you can intimidate our client. We won't permit it. You address the issues to the mediators and stop harassing this young lady.
How come the mediator didn't step in there?
Because it's like the judge.
Same situation.
What is he going to do, call the police? He's not going to do anything. Also, you'll find out that the mediator was mediating all the cases for the electric company, and they were a big client, a big customer.
He doesn't want to upset them. He had this lawyer in there all the time,
and they were his pals, and they were his source of, he was making a living from them.
Everybody's looking out for their own backs.
Right. So yeah. Johnson glared at me. The mediator didn't say a word. He sat there impassively. And it occurred to me that the mediator's firm was probably mediating many cases for the same electric company, and the representative was sitting there absorbing everything. That's why he didn't do anything.
Yeah.
So the mediator finally said that Mr. Johnson should proceed. And he was soon back at it, and I was again objecting. Finally, Mel Martin pulls me aside, and he says, Lewis, he said, it's clear that this guy wants to see the settlement destroyed. Their last offer is really acceptable. I'm just trying to get them to increase it a bit. Our client makes a lousy witness. Our own doctor is balking at giving us a permanent disability rating. Let's not blow the settlement over a personal dispute.
So you're in a tight spot.
I was at fault for creating a dispute by objecting to the bully.
Oh, boy.
So, anyhow, I physically escorted our client, Myra, out of the room when she started to cry. And Mr. Johnson asked, and that's the other attorney, that she be compelled to return. Mm-hmm. And the mediator evidently felt that Johnson had accomplished his mission. So he said, no, she doesn't have to return. And she sat outside, and we went back and forth over the settlement amount with the adjuster from the electric company. When we rejected the electric company's final offer, Mr. Johnson was called outside the conference room to speak to the company representative and the mediator. And Mr. Johnson, the attorney, sticks his head in the door and yells out, Rez, come out here and I'll settle this with you right now. And he's waving a fist at me.
Wow, he wasn't stopping.
No.
Definitely on a mission.
Bullies are very much the same. They never go after anyone unless they don't have a big advantage. They've got to have a big advantage.
Right.
Well, at that time, I was 87 years old. I was about 5'6" tall. And this guy was 15 years younger than I, a foot taller, and 100 pounds heavier. That's always the case, it seems. So the facts were against him. The law was against him. He was a miserable person, bellicose, mumbling, nasty, just completely angry, and emotionally unfit to be an attorney. So the best he could do was fist fight.
Mm-hmm. What about you? What were you going to do?
Well, there's usually a way of getting even. So I very quietly told the electric company's representative that we couldn't negotiate with Mr. Johnson because he was so insulting, and that if they wanted to settle the case, she would have to deal with us directly and alone. No attorney, no mediator. She sat down with us, and we settled the case in a matter of minutes. She told us initially that she had full authority to settle for our demand when she came to the mediation. That's one of the questions they asked. You have full authority to settle. And the law requires them to have full authority to settle for the demand. Now she says she has to call the home office for settlement authority.
Oh, what a liar.
Yeah, she got it, but they lied. She lied, too.
Wow.
So they're all bad. After the case was resolved, Mr. Johnson could be heard in the hallway calling out for a physical battle with me, calling out personal insults to me. Come out here and fight. I'll punch you out, you old man.
Oh, my goodness.
I was afraid to go out there.
Who
the guy
says
was crazy.
That?
He was nuts.
My co-counsel,
Mel Martin, prevailed on me not to file a bar claim, not to call the police, not to file an ethics complaint against Johnson. Mel didn't want to be involved. Johnson is thinking of retiring, and the sooner the better. Well...
And the mediator's still nothing.
No, as a matter of fact, it's even worse, because the mediator was corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
He allowed Johnson to run wild. He failed to control the mediation. And why? Because supposedly the independent mediator will privately, but in front of your client, tell you the shortcomings of your case, and then ask you to divulge in confidence the least amount your client will accept for a settlement. So they're trying to get you to confide in them,
mm-hmm.
but they don't tell you.
Right.
Confidential trust.
Yeah, is that ethical?
Well, that's what they do. Of course it's not ethical. And then he fails to reveal that he previously and repeatedly mediates for the same defendant electric company. He deals with the same company's professional negotiators and the same company's attorneys regularly. He gets instructions from them as to the amount they would like to see the case settled for. He tries to bring it in for less, even though he doesn't tell you what the authority is.
Right.
And he gives them a wholesale discounted mediation fee. They don't pay what you pay. They get a discounted fee. So much for integrity.
So yeah, there's no way to report that? Like, isn't it a conflict of interest? And
you have to have witnesses, and it's their word against yours, and they deny it, and it's not recorded, and then your client has to come in, and she doesn't want to be bothered, and she's
right.
a 21-year-old girl
that's about to have a baby.
Had an illegitimate child.
And yeah.
So there always seems to be a sequel.
Yeah, what happened?
2 weeks after the case was settled, the client, Myra, calls me up and says, could I help her cut down Mill Martin's attorney's fee? Her own. So that's what she was like. So she was a lowlife to start with.
And what's the moral of the story here?
Well,
we have quite a bit to learn.
Yeah, the moral of the story is that the bullying, lying, dishonesty is very prevalent. The defendant's representative lied. There's no recourse. Mediators lie. They're not under oath. The mediator doesn't disclose how much money or how many cases he gets from the other side. They should. They're obligated to do that, but they
yep.
don't. He'll always say, oh, yeah, I told him.
Hmm.
It's his word against yours. The bar's not going to do anything. There's it for mediators. Mediation is a separate thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's entirely separate. And then they have mediation of disputes under the Florida law. Mediation can occur in a litigation, in a lawsuit, in the circuit court, in the courts, and then you can have separate mediation without the courts, where the mediator brings you together to settle.
Mm. And so, I'm curious, what's like the background of a mediator typically as far as schooling or...
Well,
experience.
I think I mentioned it in one of my lectures. Actually, you don't have to do any. You could be a mediator right now yourself.
Oh, okay.
Just put out a sign and say, I'm a mediator and I'm available to handle mediation.
Oh.
That's all. Here's my address and phone number. You don't have to be certified.
Wow.
If you want to be certified, you can't be court appointed or do court mediations
mm-hmm.
unless you are certified by the courts. And then you have to take a test. It's like 2 weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And you are admitted. You don't have to take a test. You just finish the course, and then you do a study with a mediator, a certified mediator. You attend a couple of mediations, and they certify you, and you pay your dues.
Wow!
And you don't have to be a lawyer.
So pretty much anybody can do it.
Well, a lot of the mediation, and I talk about it later on, has been taken over by non-attorneys
mm-hmm.
and by people who really don't have much of an education, not even a high school education.
Yeah.
And so somebody is working as a clerk in an office someplace and wants to pick up a few dollars. They get certified as a mediator. They get a card printed out, certified mediator. They advertise. They can do all kinds of stuff, family law,
mm-hmm.
And they don't have to be lawyers. And it's, in my opinion, very dangerous.
Yeah, it creates a lot of problems.
Lot of
yeah.
The mediation system. I'll talk about it. I don't know when, but one of them I'll talk about mediation and I'll tell
yeah.
you.
Yeah, I'd love to learn more about it.
The whole process, but it's got a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, here they were lying and cheating, and The mediator is not a judge, and there's no sanctions control. He would have had to call the police for the bullying. It's very prevalent, and bullying, by the way, in general, is become more and more prevalent. It's not going away, there's retaliation. If you complain, threats, you're fired, you're demoted, you're physically attacked, your family's attacked, you're investigated, you're censured, you're ostracized, you don't get promotions, you don't get bonuses, a million ways to get
in. And you were the victim of something. And
right,
and
you're the victim and you pay the price.
You pay the price later.
It's very prevalent and there's very little you can do about it. Sometimes more than one person is the bully. Sometimes it's a group of people. In schools, the bullying comes mostly from friends. Friends is jealous. You got on the basketball team, they didn't make the team. You got an A, they got a C. Why did you get the A and I got the C? They hate you. You lose, so there's competition. Your popularity is always an issue, especially with women. Who's popular, who's not popular. And then they ostracize you. You have the problems result in depression. You report to the school, and
they don't do anything.
Very little they can do. They can bring you in and lecture and everything else, and then they say, "I'll get you." I'll get you for that. You have it in civil rights. People who march, they get fired. Some of the people in the Black Lives Matter that march. They'll be singled out, and they won't get promotions, and they won't get their vacations when they want it.
Wow.
And they won't get bonuses, or they'll be graded. They'll say, does not perform up to standards.
Right. They'll use their evaluation
the
against
way,
them.
Too. The people that were in the Trump march on the Capitol may get called in by their corporate executives or the supervisors and said, "You reflect, you wore a t-shirt that had our company name on it. Boy, you're in trouble. You'll have to get fired."
Yeah. And a lot of these people were outed too. And I'm pretty sure like their company, the company that they worked for was also represented. So they're a bad representation of that place. So, yeah.
And then you're in politics, it's the same thing, threats and insults and blackmail. And they use surveillance and sometimes you get set up. They falsify documents. They falsify photographs. They have you. They take your head and put it on someone else's body in a photograph.
Yeah.
It costs a lot of money to undo that. They send your wife a picture of you in bed with a woman without any clothes on.
Oh boy! Yeah. No,
and
I don't want that.
It's your face and somebody else's body, and you could have a lot of explaining to do. It's not good. There's a lot of isolation, too, you know, where you, and you get investigated. They report you to the tax department. There's a lot of enemies lists.
Yeah.
And the president's, Nixon, had an enemies list, and he wanted the tax department and the FBI, especially when under Hoover, it was involved in that kind of stuff. They would investigate. They went after Martin Luther King.
Right.
And they went after the Kennedys. Mm-hmm. That was the FBI. So then you have the courts in the bullying a judge. You know, you can bully judges. So a lot of criminals try to bully the judge. They threaten them. They threaten their families. They're going to kill them. They're going to maim them. Well, the federal government and the state governments can protect the judges. And the judges' immediate families, the children who are in school, and the wife or husband. But what about the parents?
Yeah.
They can't protect the judges' parents, and the parents may live in a different state. And recently, I knew it was going to happen, a criminal went in and killed a judge's mother.
Oh, no.
To get even with the federal judge.
Wow.
And that was going to happen. That was going to happen. And these are drug lords, and they don't think about anything.
No, they don't care.
They're jurors, witnesses disappear. Not only are intimidated, they disappear, they're killed, they're cremated, they're gone, they can't find them. Jurors are threatened, and it's very prevalent. And nothing, there's nothing they can do about it. What about police, stop and frisk, remember that? Resisting arrest, planting evidence, They create a story or a charge. They charge you with perjury. The police unions represent the policemen. And there's very often a presumption of innocence on the part of the police.
Yeah.
They have a quasi-immunity.
Yeah.
It's terrible. So those are some of the things. I was going to tell you about Alex Windman. I don't know if you know who he is, but
nope.
I'll tell you about him.
Yeah, tell me.
Alex Windman was a lieutenant colonel in the military, and he was a member of the National Security Council as part of his military duties. And he listened in on the telephone conversation between President Trump and the Ukrainian president, which got involved in the impeachment proceedings, where they tried to pressure the president of Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden's son.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he testified before Congress, and he told the truth, evidently. He was on the House. He was the House Intelligence Committee conducted the hearing, as I recall, and he was passed over for promotion to full colonel. He was thrown off the National Security Council, and he finally retired because his career was over. And that was because he bullying, because he got getting even retaliation.
Yeah.
Not only that, his twin brother was Yevgeny Windman.
Mm-hmm.
Yevgeny Windman was also a lieutenant colonel, and he also got in trouble. And his career was, he was harassed, and his career was damaged, and he, I think, retired too. He was, his job was changed, and
yeah.
His career was really inhibited. And then you have...
that's unfortunate. All for saying the truth.
Yeah, well, you know, they fire you, they demote you, they ostracize you, they don't give you bonuses. Then you have a lot of the very interesting whistleblower laws.
Mm.
That's similar when people feel an obligation to come forward.
Yeah.
Some of them make a lot of money. It's called... QUETAM laws, where they...
How do you spell that?
QUETAM.
QUETAM, oh.
And you can get between 15% and 30% of the money that you recover for the government, that the government recovers from your information. You find someone's cheating on their tax returns,
mm-hmm.
or in other government contracts, particularly the quality of the goods, they're watering down the paint that they're selling or something. They're not giving the correct munitions that they're supposedly manufacturing. And the government finds that out and investigates and collects money, fines them, you can get a piece of the fine.
Wow.
A lot of people have made millions of dollars. So you have, remember Deep Throat?
Mm-hmm.
And that was an inside thing. That was, but the person didn't want any money, and he told the newspaper, the
mm-hmm.
Washington Post,
mm-hmm.
Bob Woodard, remember, and Carl Bernstein?
Don't know.
The reporters in the Washington Post.
Oh, okay.
That he told. And his name was Mark Felt. And he was Deep Throat. He was in the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
They met him in garages and so on. You had, for example, you had another one in Enron. Remember Enron?
Yeah.
Well, that was...
That huge scandal.
They were doing false accounting. There was about $21 billion paid to creditors because of it.
Yeah.
They actually... they were showing all kinds of assets. Remember, it was, I think Arthur Anderson was the accounting firm. They went under because of it. And they're actually, Arthur Anderson was showing what a great financial position they were in, and they were actually $690 million in debt at the time. So they had problems. And that was also, bullying.
Mm-hmm.
They were bullies. They had military bullying. Are you familiar with that?
I'm sure it happens, yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It happened. Military is really terrible. Anytime you get into a military unit, you have cadre, people that are in there before you,
mm-hmm.
Usually corporals and sergeants and so on, and they're above you. Not the officers so much, But the enlisted men will harass the privates, and they'll say, "You're my property, and you'll do what I tell you, and you're my gopher boy, and shine my shoes, and you'll do this, and you'll take over my duties, and and if you don't, they go after you physically and mentally." Then you have the elite groups. Are you familiar with the elite groups in the military?
Like what? Give me an example.
SEALs.
Oh, yeah.
The Rangers, the paratroopers. There's a lot of harassment and a lot of sexual harassment. But women can't get into those. Women Rangers are very tough.
Yeah.
And they go after them. SEALs have that problem, too. And also, and there's a club that used to be, they don't have it anymore, called the Tailhook Society.
Huh.
That was for the guys landing, pilots landing on aircraft carriers.
Oh,
and it was
wow.
an alcoholic, wild orgy that these guys had. They had wild times. Well, if you land on an aircraft carrier a lot, you're entitled to become an alcoholic. But that's what they do. Then you have prisons. That's really terrible. Prison is probably the worst because the guards rape, beat, torture, take bribes. If you want anything, they'll sell you drugs, they'll sell you cigarettes, whatever you want. They take your money. The inmates have a pecking order.
Yeah.
It's murder. It's easier for the guards to harass you than it is the inmates, but the inmates still do it.
Yeah,
and
of course.
And prison is organized into gangs.
Yeah.
Then they deal in sex and drugs and food and money, and somebody's going to say, "I'm your pal, I'm your big brother, I'm going to look after you," and he's going to rape you.
Yep.
So that goes on a lot. Corporations have it. Cliques, where your career gets hooked on to your supervisor. For example, at one insurance company I know, in the home office, they had the president and the vice president and everything, and all they had a team. You hooked your wagon onto their, onto their star. You know, they went up, you went with them.
Right.
They went down, you wound up with an office in the basement. And your promotions and career was, to a great extent, conditioned upon your supervisor's success. Or the team you were on, team A, B, C.
Right.
And you went up and down with that. That's not fair.
No.
But they have that. That's terrible. So those were some of the problems. I'm talking about the government is a big. I talked to you about Valerie Flame in a in another episode, but she was outed, and she was her career was destroyed, and she didn't do anything. She had her husband do a report, and he told the truth, and that's what happened.
Yeah.
They didn't want to hear what she had to say. So I think I told you, his name was Joseph Wilson, as I recall. So those are the things about bullying. It's exists. It's very prevalent. There's very little you can do about it. You can complain. Best thing to do is to avoid bullies. Get away. That's my advice.
Get away.
I tell clients, you know, if you have a daughter in school and she's being bullied, the best thing you can do is just get her out of the school and get her into another school. If you have to move and you can afford it, move. That's what I tell them.
It's tough, though, because sometimes that's not the case. So it's like, what do you do then if you can't
then it's tough.
Leave
then
the situation?
Call the police.
Yeah.
You can't. The school sometimes is not enough. You've got to call the police and say, my child is being bullied and threatened. And then the police come in and it's a little better.
Yeah.
But even so, she's ostracized.
Right.
Then the girls that are bullying her say, well, you can't join our club and our sorority and whatever. And we don't
want
to play with
you.
And
you're
not invited on the trip and so on. No one's going to sit next to you on the bus. So it's mean stuff.
Yep. Well, I learned quite a bit, and the fact that it happens within law too is I didn't think about it. You know, I knew about the military and some others, but never really thought, you know, that was possible. And all the physical altercations that you had to deal with, they're pretty shocking too. So thank you so much for sharing those experiences.
Thank you.
You've had quite a few stories for us. Thank you.
Thank you.